The teenage years are tough enough for parents as we guide children through adolescence. But in addition to the physical changes, emotional issues, and peer pressure, today's parents must navigate the added reality of violence, especially in school.
Today on Real Family Talk, we'll discuss this growing global issue and how to parent today's teenagers who are growing up in an age of violence. Join us.
Violence at school has become a major issue. We see it almost every day in the news. CNN reports that in the last 10 years, since January 2009, there have been 288 school shootings in the U.S. alone. Mexico, South Africa, India, France, Canada, Brazil are just a few of the other countries where it is also happening.
Here to talk with us about this today are Dr. Mayuri Pandit, a licensed clinical family therapist, and veteran school chaplain, Tim Soper.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Delighted you're here. So this is a huge issue, and the first question we'd like to ask is, what do you say to parents and their teens facing this threatening violence as they go to school every day?
I think especially for teens, it's important to tell them that any and all of what they're feeling is okay, and also that it's important to tell and talk about what they're thinking, what's going on for them in their mind, the things they're seeing, the questions that they have. So that's especially important for the teens. Now, for the parents, I would say three things. First, I think teenagers need to know that somebody is in control.
Yes.
Somebody knows what to do. Somebody's going to guide us through this. So if parents, I tell them all the time, you need to do some self-soothing. You need to calm down. You need to be like, you need to just fake it till you make it if you need to. But be there as a presence that can guide them and, you know, come up with a plan, see what you can do. Then the other two things are make sure that you are spending time asking your teen what's going on.
So basically making sure that you are in touch with their feelings.
Exactly.
And that you know what's in their heads.
Yes. And the last thing is to come up with a plan for your family.
Okay.
If something happens, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? In a very calm way. You know, it doesn't have to be a big deal. It doesn't have to be dramatic. But just this is what we're going to do, and we're going to be all right.
Walk us through that a little bit.
Give
us an example of what would be a plan that parents could talk with their teens about.
Sure. So if something came up on the news and it's a good opportunity to talk about something like this, a parent might say, hey, you know, I wanted to know if at school you guys talk about shootings. Do you know where the exits are? I know this is kind of a scary thing to talk about, but if you need to know any of those things, make sure that you talk to your teachers or to me. Do you know how you can contact me, where you can contact me if you need to get a hold of me if something's going on. Those types of things might be good to talk about.
So basically, you're talking about a strategic plan for if something goes wrong.
A safety plan.
Exactly.
It's interesting because after 9/11, we developed a plan like that with our children because it was the first time in our parenting of our children that something major, you know, a major episode like that happened. And so we developed a plan as to, you know, who would call who, which child would call my husband, which one would call me, how we would exit, or if they were in the same school at the same time, they would look for each other if they had permission. So those are some of the things, right, that parents could do.
Absolutely.
And it makes everyone feel like, okay, at least we got something to hang our hat on if something happens. It makes them feel a little calmer.
Yeah.
Having a plan is always a good thing,
yes.
And it helps you to feel a lot more comfortable with what may happen.
Exactly.
Okay, so how does the stress of this possibility manifest itself on parents and on teens? What would you say, Tim?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think as we're more increasingly aware of this in the schools, as the students see it happening in their world, I think there's a couple ways that I observe it happening. Number one, of course, an increased anxiety among the students. There's that extra awareness of the dangers, and so they're for many kids, it's anxiety. Yeah.
So when you say anxiety, how does it manifest? What does it look like?
So
it's happening.
You know, we use that kind of generic word stress, right? Different stress behaviors. Really coming as a counselor, you know, a school counselor to myself or other school counselors, you know, there's definitely an increased.
They're talking more about
it. So you find that kids are coming to your office because you're with teens all day long,
correct,
every day.
Correct.
So you see an increase in them coming for counseling.
Yeah.
And what are some of the things that they're concerned about? Like, what do they share with you?
You know, it really has a lot to do with just at their age trying to know how to manage it. You know, I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. I don't know how all these things fit together. And so it's, you know, a lot of questions about managing, and maybe how can I reduce some of the things that are stressors in my life? How can I get rid of those?
Yeah. Sure. Tim, you recently had a lockdown at your school. How did that manifest itself? What really happened there?
So in my years of teaching, I have had a number of external threats, you know, community area-wide threats where schools are cautious and they do a kind of a soft lockdown. But this one you're referencing was internal. So you're talking about a plan, those kind of things. I think the first takeaway from it that we all had as students, as faculty, as parents and community was that even in the presence of a plan, a lot of things go out the window. So there was some chaotic response, because until you know exactly what's happening, you're not exactly sure what part of the plan.
So was it an intruder? Mm-hmm. Was it another student that had weapons or something? I mean, I know you can't say too much, but the students find out about it first, and then faculty, or because you're saying there was some chaos there.
Sure. So in this particular case, it was a threat that was detected before the school day, or as the school day was unfolding.
Okay.
Internal meaning a potential threat from a student.
Right.
So as the administration uncovered that, they decided that the best thing to do was to, you know, lock down to kind of shelter in place.
So and contain the situation.
Yes. So the students, of course, were unaware exactly what was going on. No one was really aware of all the details.
Except administration and perhaps the teachers.
Sure.
Okay.
And there is, I would add this, I think, going back to that plan idea, but the school that I work at, they have a close relationship with the police department. We've done some training working on those plans. What do we do in those situations? So to see the authorities be involved, you know, immediately, that did help, certainly.
Yeah.
So they came. They came to your rescue very quickly. They came
Correct.
To your
came
facilities
and,
there.
Yeah, they came and dealt with the situation. And,
all right. What else, Maya, can parents say to their teens as they prepare for this kind of stuff? I know you mentioned some things already. As we're looking at their mental health and their approach to this whole reality that's become so intense, what else can parents say to their students?
Well, let's hold that thought and come back to the second. We'll get that answer in the second segment.
Okay. After a short break, we'll discuss more of this topic with Dr. Pandit and Chaplain Soper. Stay with us.
How safe are your teenagers in school? According to a 2018 report from the United Nations Children's Fund, about half of students ages 13 to 15, which is 150 million globally, say they experience violence in school. This is seen in the form of fighting with peers, bullying, and even physical punishment from teachers. Wow. Hopefully none of our children are experiencing physical punishment from teachers, but we do know that it happens in some places. But Tim, you are with teenagers all the time, and you mentioned earlier that you see an increase of students coming to your office, and even with the lockdown, it was an internal threat. So I distinctly heard you say, you know, in the past, you were worried about external threats, but there are also internal threats. And so where is all this angst and anxiety coming from? What's happening with our kids?
Yeah, that really is the million-dollar question. You know, if we could really pinpoint, I think, an exact answer to that, that would certainly help. Again, from the students, there's, I think, a lot of confusion. Teenagers are growing and developing. Yes. They're putting together all those pieces in life, and our world has a lot of things in it. You know, they see, of course, they look at the news and see the violence. They have access to all sorts of things at their fingertips, and to put all that together into a nice coherent shell that makes sense is difficult.
So it's become a normal for them to just live in a violent environment.
It is a normal.
And so we see that there's a psychological impact on the kids. So how are they to deal with this? What do you recommend? He's saying, you know, they're looking at violent things. I mean, if you just turn on the news, it's all violent.
The news, the music, the everything, the movies, everything.
Right. So how are they to handle this? What is the psychological impact and what can be done to help them?
So I definitely think there's this heightened super awareness, hypervigilance that tends to come up when you feel like your world isn't safe. I would absolutely recommend a limited exposure to the news. Now, I know some people might have an issue with that because you want to keep up with what's going on, and you absolutely do, but just limit the amount of time you're looking at, especially bad news.
Yeah, and it's repeated anyway. Right? I mean, we hear the same thing at 8 o'clock a.m. and 8 p.m. So you're saying don't keep watching it over and over again.
Especially if it's cable news. I mean, it's the same news over and over. And then, you know, in the morning and then in the evening. And the news cycle, you know, they don't have a whole lot. And it's a whole lot of violence.
Yeah.
But honestly, I do you think that our kids are really watching just news? I mean, do you think they're also watching other violent things?
Sure. We see that in the school, of course, because in our age of technology, the kids can, you know, can travel anywhere with it. So certainly the exposure goes, you know, beyond the news. There's, of course, our games, our entertainment, our music, all those things. And lots of studies have been done about that. And certainly plays a big role in the development. Yeah. So we, as parents, that is a key to be limiting, I think, on exposure to a lot of those images, those things.
Yeah. But really, were you going to say something?
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, how do you mitigate all of this exposure, and do you have any coalitions with the parents? Do you have any meetings? As a chaplain, the school has any intentional meetings with parents to help some of them, especially navigate some of these waters. You know, what do you do to set some boundaries that are
especially for teenagers?
Yeah, sure,
because you know
sure.
it's a little easier when you're dealing with smaller children, but when you get into the 14 to 18 age group, high school, it's a little more difficult for parents to put those parameters and boundaries in place. So,
right. Yeah, I believe we're really putting our thumb on the issue here, and that is the home and parenting is certainly a big key. So as a chaplain, as working in the schools, we do have to have that constant and evolving communication and plan with our parents. I think it's really, really important for parents to model good, appropriate behavior with these different images and technologies as well, and showing the students, showing our own children, what appropriate behavior is. That can be difficult as an adult.
Now, what about teachers? Because what I'm hearing from many of my friends who are parents of high school kids, they're saying that teachers are now saying the kids need to have like the latest cell phone or the latest smartphone because they're going to integrate cell phone technology into the classroom. And so isn't that creating somewhat of a challenge as well? Doesn't that make it difficult for the kids?
It absolutely does can make it difficult, but also it can be a positive thing. It's just a tool. It's how you use it. So technology, phones, computers, all that stuff, it can be very good to know how it works, but how much time are you spending on it? What are you looking at it and interacting with it? From what perspective, what kind of websites, what kind of shows. I encourage my parents all the time to get in your teen's business. Get in your teen's business, know what they're doing. You don't need to have the latest stuff to be able to manage the latest stuff. So I don't know that competitive kind of let's get the latest thing may be the best thing, but it can be helpful to at least know how these basic things work.
So you suggest what we know in the field as monitoring.
Yeah.
Now, so can you explain, because there are many studies that talk about the importance of parents monitoring their teenagers. Now, in today's world, teenagers would say, get out of my business.
Yes.
Right? So how do you help parents manage that balance of monitoring versus authoritarian style parenting?
That is a really good question, and it is a balance. You said it right. It definitely is a balance. It has to come from a place where you care about them. And kids know. Kids know when you're just coming down with the rules or trying to get them to be little model citizens in a box, or when they feel like you really care about getting to know who they are.
So what's an approach that you can take with teenagers to help them understand that you, in fact, do care, and you're trying to protect them, and you're trying to help them not be as anxious as they could be because of the environment? What would you say?
So sometimes I ask parents, what percentage of your conversation with your kids is about do this, do that, manage this, manage that, kind of advice giving, teaching, and what percent is just relational, just hanging out, getting to know them? And sometimes you want to balance that out a little bit. And
right.
Make sure that it's
right, because you don't want to just spend the whole time just kicking back with them, right? So
yes.
You're saying, though, that it is important to be somewhat friendly towards
yes.
your children. So I came from a background where parents were not friends with children.
Mm.
And so a lot of us have to deal with that, where we make that change, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to do what you're saying, mm-hmm. to talk to our kids rather than just tell them
yes.
what they need, what they need
their
to
opinions.
Be doing.
Exactly. Yep. Ask their opinions. They might surprise you. They might have thought of lots of things that are like really deep and interesting, and it's just in their head, and now you're opening the gate for them to share that with you.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful point. In a moment, we'll talk more with Mayuri and Tim. Stay with us.
Globally, more than one in three students between the ages of 13 and 15 say they experience bullying at school. Tim, tell me a little bit about bullying and the schools where you've been. What percentage of kids, you would say, that you've worked with, wherever you've worked, have been bullied, and what does that look like?
We've done quite a bit of looking at this in the past few years, as, again, we have a more heightened awareness of some of these issues. And to illustrate, to answer your question, I'll use a little story to illustrate. We, in discussing this, our administrator recently showed us some security camera footage within our school of a student that was being actively bullied, and we knew that this might be going on, but personally, I hadn't felt that I had seen it. So we all watched together this short segment of a student walking down a hallway and being actively bullied, and what struck me most of all was that myself, I walked by in the footage to my classroom,
right past
next,
what
right
was
next
happening.
To it.
Wow.
They stopped while I passed, and then it continued. So it was an eye-opening experience to realize, you know,
that it's happening
that it
right,
happens right in front
of your eyes.
Eyes. Mm-hmm. So the ages, it varies. I think the frequency, the statistics show really the middle school age is the kind of peak of the bullying behavior.
Okay, so it's about 12, 13?
Right, that yeah. 6th, 7th, 8th yeah. grade.
But you said something mm-hmm. really interesting, and that is you walked by, mm-hmm. but when you walked by, it stopped.
It stopped, mm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that bully had so much power over the victim.
Mm-hmm.
that he said nothing or she said nothing to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's happening? Why does that happen?
So there are in any bullying situation you have, and you're right in saying the word power. It's a power situation, and you have a lot of participants in that particular situation. There's a crowd of students. You have one or two that are doing the bullying behavior, and you have the one being bullied, but you have a crowd of other people as well who are in some way either enabling or fighting against it by what they do. And that's an important thing to talk about with our students, is that it's not just about someone being bullied and someone doing the bullying. It's about how all of us participate, because it's an issue of power. And if the one doing the bullying realizes that no one else in the environment is willing to give them that power, then that goes a long way to stopping that behavior.
So I'm hearing you say that you do talk to your students about it.
We did work very strongly and incorporated a program. We had monthly meetings with our students, talked about the issues.
And do you have any, are there any consequences for bullies as you have experienced in your schools?
There certainly can be, discipline consequences for that behavior. But I think, again, addressing the issue really goes to appealing to the entire student body, and that we all have an important part
in this. So that we're not all participants unknowingly in this.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Maya, so what's the psychological impact on students on the matter of bullying, on the person who's doing the bullying and the person who is being bullied? What would you say?
Yes, I appreciate that question, because it is for both.
Yes.
There's definitely an impact on the victim and on the bullier, if you want to call it that. So it can be very difficult. Bullying is like a stripping away of your self-confidence and sometimes even self-worth. So you walk away with messages like, I'm weak, I'm powerless, I'm nothing, I'm not important, I'm unlovable.
Yeah.
And those messages, if they're really internalized and there's no one to counteract those messages, that child can grow up to be an adult that thinks nothing of themselves.
That's damaging, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and so the thing is, though, the child that's being bullied, is there a certain child that is more prone to bullying, because this child is internalizing this.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that they're not even sharing this
mm-hmm.
at home or with the teacher. I'm just thinking, like, if I'm being bullied in school, the teacher walks by, I'm like, I'm gonna say something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me. But the child who gets bullied probably wouldn't say something.
No.
So what's going on there that this child is so reluctant to cry out or ask for help?
And before you answer, I would ask or add, is there a psychological profile to this individual who's allowing this to happen to them without saying anything?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two things that come to mind when you ask me these things. The first is that the kids I work with, almost every single one of them has a rough, unsupportive home life.
Okay.
And hasn't been taught a lot of social skills or being able to relate to others.
On both sides.
On both sides.
The bullier and the
and
the bullied.
Yes.
Okay.
On both sides, absolutely. And then the other thing when we talk about profiling is this idea of being able to instill some sort of empowerment in kids. So kids that come from an environment, whether it's at home or in other places, where they feel like they can't manage, either their parent or someone else is like, you can't do it right, you can't manage. Then when they go to school and they get that same message from the bully, they don't question it. And so they just go with it.
Oh, that is so important.
So parents bullying their children to be bullied.
Maybe unknowingly.
Yeah.
Maybe
right, unknowingly. Yes. Even to the point where sometimes as parents we might be a little perfectionistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might say to our kids, oh, you're not getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you.
Mm-hmm.
We think we're helping them rather than allowing them to be empowered. So what if they make a mistake?
Yes.
Right? So what was critical about what you just said was the fact that they don't question the bullying.
Yes.
And I think that's what I was trying to get to. A child that's being bullied and you're walking by and then all of a sudden it stops, but doesn't question that. They just expect it then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because perhaps the people who are in their lives who are in positions of authority
mm-hmm.
bully them unknowingly.
Yes. So. And I would also like to say that the bullier usually is being bullied somewhere else in their life.
Okay.
And they also have gotten the
message. They've reversed it.
Yes. They've also gotten the message, this is how you have power and control.
It's a food chain kind of thing.
Yes.
Where are you on that food chain?
Bullies
so
are
I don't
not
have
born.
It at home.
Yeah. They're made. Yeah.
So I'm going to get it someplace else.
Yes.
And then they take it into life, and then we see violence in marriage and parenting and later on in life.
So I was thinking that it doesn't only happen in school, but even siblings bully each other. Mm-hmm. And what you just described, Tim, that happened at your school, and you could see it through through the video there, through that segment, is that kids do the same thing at home. You know, one of the kids is bullying his brother or sister, and then the parent comes in, and all of a sudden the bullying stops, and then the parent goes by, and the bullying continues, you know. So I think kids rehearse this stuff at home, and then they do it again at school.
Mm-hmm. It speaks to an awareness that that our young people do have about situation too. It's not just a natural thing that they're considered to be okay and right, because if I stop the behavior when someone walks by, I know that behavior is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so is there anything else you can do to mitigate the bullying at your school? What have you done? Are there you started talking about programs at your school.
Yeah.
And what have you done? Now we have about 30 seconds where we can get a response.
There are good programs out there, and they address, you know, some of those behaviors and really the corporate management of it. I think, as a chaplain, I think one of the most important things is really to help our students understand and instill in them some of the basic principles in Scripture about the value of others.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're all made in the image of God.
Okay.
Loving our enemies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some of those basic principles of relationships are go as far in helping the situation as anything.
Mm-hmm. So 5 seconds each, maybe 10 seconds. What would you say, takeaway for violence? What would be the most important thing you want our audience to know?
The most important thing I want the parents and the kids to know, but especially the parents, get to know your kid.
Okay.
Get to know their world.
Excellent. Yeah. What would you say, Tim?
I'd add two quick things. Authenticity, I think, is an important word in our relationship with our students and with our children. And then the comfort and peace that we have as Christians, knowing that through it all, God is in control.
Amen.
He has things covered. There's a lot we can't know, but we know that
Thank
He has
you.
It.
Thank you. That's
Thank
been
you
wonderful.
So much.
Thank you to our guests, Dr. Maya Pandit and Chaplain Tim Soper, for helping us address this important topic today. And thanks to our viewers for watching. We'll see you next time.